My name is Richard House. I'm a member of HaHa, and we were the group commissioned to work with Sculpture Chicago, and we came up with Flood.
And I'm Wendy Jacob, and I'm also one of the four members of Flood. And the prompt asks us to say what our role is. And as a collective, we didn't have different roles. We all did everything. And when HaHa dissolved or expanded into the larger group Flood, we continue to share the work of the project among all of us.
I'm Laurie Palmer. I'm also was a member of HaHa with John and Richard and Wendy.
I'm John Plouffe, and I was a member of HaHa that initiated Flood, and then became involved with a whole network of relationships between Flood members and social service organizations in Chicago around the topics of HIV and AIDS. I was also a resident in Rogers Park around the corner from the storefront where the Flood Garden took place, and kind of have a grounding in the place as well as with a group of people. So Flood was a group of about 20 or 30 people, and it was initially organized by the four members of the HaHa Collective. And Flood was also, as I said, a place, a hydroponic garden in a storefront in Chicago's Rogers Park neighborhood. And the garden was at 1769 Greenleaf Street from about 1992 to about 1995. The Flood Garden grew green vegetables like kale and collard greens. And those vegetables were distributed along with Open Hand Chicago's Meals on Wheels program for people with AIDS. But more than the actual physical garden, which was a really nice place to meet all year round in Chicago, to have the green vegetables growing and a meeting place, more than the garden itself was the storefront provided, you know, a place for people to get together for biweekly meals, meeting space for different groups to come together, educational programs. At a time where we were all thinking fast about what would come next around issues of HIV and AIDS. It was a place really to organize, to make sense of the epidemic, and to try to find like connections with other people that would help us all kind of move through that troubled time together.
The project took place in Rogers Park, which, as John has mentioned, was our home for all of us. Rogers Park at that time, I believe, had the highest rising numbers of newly diagnosed people who were HIV positive. And there didn't seem to be too much happening in the city to work with that.
And we also were all feeling the effects of HIV/AIDS and on our friends and our lives in the world. I think that we felt like as artists, we, especially because we were offered this commission in a sense from Sculpture Chicago, that there might be another way that we could use this unusual public art invitation to do something that was sort of an ongoing community-based response and action. But, you know, very anecdotally, we found out that some people with AIDS were very, very careful to wash their vegetables to make sure that the dirt was off because of potential pathogens that might create opportunistic infections. And so that led us to this idea of not just a garden, which is already about growth and life and caregiving, but also a hydroponic garden, which would be totally without soil. And so that's where that idea sort of got started. We took a research trip to Ohio to learn about hydroponics. And the more we learned, the more we understood that hydroponics, the way that the roots grow together, the way that everything in the system is interconnected and subject to the same conditions as everything else, that there was an enormous metaphor here.
So as Laurie said, the first thing you see are the outdoor gardens. Flood was in the storefront on Greenleaf Street. Maybe just a block from the metro line on one side, and then a few blocks to the L on the other side. So it was this, it felt sort of like an in-between space, between the a more affluent on one side, a more affluent neighborhood to the north, and then to the south, sort of the a less affluent neighborhood of Rogers Park. And so I think the thing about the storefront was that, these big windows, and the first thing you notice walking by are these huge lights, these enormous metal halide lamps, which like suns. And then you'd see this field of greens. So it was kind of a mysterious place. Like, it wasn't obvious what it was. It was a storefront, but it didn't really look like a store. And if it was a business, it really wasn't clear what it was. And if there was anybody there, then the door would be open and you could just walk inside. And when you come in, you'd find these large tables, the hydroponic systems that Laurie was describing, where there'd be a field of greens growing in little rock wool plugs, and growing in these long white PVC troughs on tables. And there's two big trash cans that held the circulating the system the sorry the water that had nutrient solution in it that was constantly circulating. Laurie also referred to this, that if it was a very fragile system, and so if overnight, like the trash can sprung a leak or the hoses came out, the whole system would fail and die. And so there really was a sense of care, the need for care, the need to care for this system. But back to the question of what you would see when you came in addition to this greens in the back, we had a library against one wall. There was books and pamphlets about HIV/AIDS, but also about hydroponics and greens. There was also piles of notebooks, which you can see here in the archive, where the volunteers would take note of like the acidity of the solution, or the aphids, the aphid infestation and how to deal with that, and who came to visit. And it was just, the notebooks are in many hands because they were being kept by more than just the four of us, the larger group of Flood. And I should add that it was probably most spectacular in the winter, when it's this gray Chicago day, and you'd look in the window and there's this sea of bright greens.
One of the things that I think was really important was our relation to just the block on Greenleaf Street that we were on. And we got pretty involved with people who lived on that block and the various slings and arrows of their lives. And some of whom were HIV positive, some of them young people who were queer and were being thrown out of their living situation. And there were a lot of stories.
And I think one of the questions we'd ask people when they came in was sort of, what do you need? What are the issues for you surrounding HIV and AIDS? Like, what access do you need? What is being denied to you? What problems do you have? And sometimes it was just like we'd have a regular meal and stuff would come up during conversations. Sometimes it was to provide information. There was basic health information there. And this is a period when it was really hard to know what was going on. It was really hard to get any clarity that there were different support agencies that you could attach to, but you'd need to know about them. And you'd need to know, you'd have to be diagnosed, you'd have to be sent to a centre. Like, it required a lot of agency on behalf of the person who'd just been diagnosed, I think. And then people who were caring for people who were sick. So that in terms of impact, there are some aspects of it that were quite unusual. Like, we had a series of lectures that were given through a doctor who's involved first with cancer research and then with AIDS research in Northwestern. And through him, we were able to get people who were working on research, on scientific research for HIV, AIDS. And they were able to present the stuff that they understood at that moment directly to people who'd just been diagnosed or people who were having problems with AZT, or so that it would be possible to learn not just about current therapies, but it would be possible to learn about support systems, but also what the thinking was on the science. There's an awful lot of stuff being published that would be in newspapers, that would be in the regular free weeklies, that was sort of suppositional, that was just guesswork. And I think one of the things we were able to do was to provide a little bit of clarity where that was possible. Flo was really pragmatic. I mean, one of the issues with educating people about HIV/AIDS at that point was pretty much just don't get it. That was the thrust of public awareness announcements and stuff, like, just don't get it. And then if you did get it, then what? What happens to you? Where the hell do you go? And also there was because of the nature of the disease, of, you know, in part way it's sexually transmitted. So how do you talk about that? Like, you know, there are communities who just don't want to confront those issues. And as Wendy had said, having a garden that's really vulnerable, where the nutrients and the water are supplied, if that cuts off, even for an hour, they're going to suffer. So it was a way of talking about ongoing healthcare, of caring for something that can be so easily compromised. And in that way, we could talk to kids about it. We could talk about, we could approach AIDS in terms of, well, how do you care for a body that is compromised, that is threatened? What can you do in a situation where it seems that very little can be done? And I think that store just represented an awful lot of hope.
In the archive are some cards that came from young students who visited the space with their class. And I remember thinking, how are we going to be able to address questions from a group of students that we don't know, we haven't worked with before, who come and drop in the space? We want to be respectful of them and the context of their classroom, and also be able to have a discussion with them. And so we created a box of anonymity where students were able to kind of write on cards, drop the cards into the box, and then HaHa presenters would pull the cards out and address the issues that were on them. And when we first did it, we didn't know what to expect at all. But as we continued doing it, what we found is that the cards were full of really sophisticated questions that were part of even very young students' lives.
There was so much ambition in what we were doing. It was about sex education. It was about healthcare in a crisis where nobody really knew what the answer was. I mean, that's what's really hard to understand now, is that, and this goes back to what Richard was saying, that, you know, people didn't know. There was no, ongoing sort of treatment at that point, initially anyway. And it was just like an open question of how to deal with this plague. And at the same time, it was an open question about what this project could become.
And also in the face of how frustrating the situation was and dark with AIDS, the garden was really a light place. And not just because of the two enormous lamps overhead, but it was fun. And people would come, and we made soup once a week and served it at the garden. And harvesting was fun. You know, you harvested standing up with a pair of scissors and sort of snipping your way from one side to the other, and then putting them in big plastic bags, and then they were delivered. And then the chance encounters with people in the neighborhood who would come in for whatever reason. And it was, so there was a kind of lightness in it that seemed impossible on top of the darkness of that time.
It's weird, isn't it, to think that when that project started, there were no drugs. There was AZT, and there were medications to help with infections, like pneumonia. But really, there was very little. And the hope at the time was always for a magic bullet. And the hope was to keep yourself healthy. So distributing the greens was really important for that. And then alongside that, there was like a social aspect where you got to know the people you were working with, or where we found out that, you know, they needed more delivery people for Meals on Wheels or something. But if I think about it, it does make me feel a bit angry now that now we do have, it is possible to repress HIV in the body, and that that has happened successfully for the past 5 years, maybe longer, 8 years, 10 years. But right now, that's denied. And that seems hugely problematic. So I guess the issue for me is that, you know, at that time we wanted a cure, and this time we kind of do have a cure, or we have something that provides relief. But the actual issue is something that underlies both periods, which is how do we talk to each other? Who do we respect? What kind of humanity do you have? What kind of empathy do you have?
I think I want to read you a couple of the notes from kids that were on those cards. Do you ever think there would be a cure for AIDS? How would you feel if your children had AIDS? Sorry, kind of emotional today. I don't know. Does anybody else have the book? How can you catch this disease? And will there ever be a cure for AIDS?